again, my gorgeous listeners. Welcome along to another episode of the Glow West podcast, where we chat about sex, sexuality, and the body. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline West, and I'm here to shine a soft light on all things sex-related. Glow West is proud to be a part of the Tortoise Shack Network, where you can find all sorts of political and cultural podcasts. If you like the content that we do, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and please pop over to Apple to rate and review. Today, my guest is talking about something that a lot of us enjoy, or at least think about, which is bondage. So this bondage can range from someone holding down your hands to handcuffs up to full-on shibari rope bondage. So it can be a little bit confusing for some people and maybe a little bit intimidating as well. So to talk us through this, my guest today is a woman who is legendary in the bondage world. Midori is a trailblazing educator, sexologist, artist, and irritant to banality. She founded the Rope Dojo and Fort Femme, which is the Women's Dominance Intensive. She penned the first English instruction book on shibari entitled Seductive Art of Japanese Bondage all the way back in 2001, which paved the way to the popularity of rope bondage. Dan Savage calls her the supernova of kink, while others affectionately call her Auntie Midori for her cool, tell it like it is, funny, reality-based teaching. She's also the author of Wildside Sex, Master Hand's Daughter, and Silk Threads. And during the pandemic, you can enjoy her online classes, events and art at patreon.com/planetmidori. Midori, thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you're keeping well over in California.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And hi, dear listeners out there. And I hope you are having a nice time listening to this. I love your opening. And God, I love your voice, I got to say.
Thank you. It's the Irish accent. It got me to some very good places last time I traveled around the States. So it came in very handy. Brilliant. Oh, well, and yours as well. Yours is a mixture of Japanese and American and a few different places because you travel quite a lot. So, yeah.
My voice is definitely my very own, that's for sure. And but it is nice to be on the show. So we're talking about bondage. Yay.
Ooh, you're essentially like the queen of bondage at this stage. You know, you've been going in this world for a long, long, long time. But for those who mightn't know what bondage is, or maybe have very, you know, conflicting ideas about what it is, or only see it in porn or something like that, how would you define what bondage is, and why are people so into it?
Okay, so bondage is one of these simple words that's a giant umbrella category. It's like saying dessert. How many kinds of dessert are there? There are infinite variety of dessert. And you can also think of bondage as like dessert in sex too. So bondage is anything that, any type of activity that consensually limits or controls a partner's mobility for fun. Of course, the key here is consensual and for fun. And as you said, bondage can include a lot of different techniques, and it's certainly a popular genre in a lot of people's sexual fantasies. And a lot of people who don't necessarily think that they're into kink or BDSM may have various fantasies or games that they actually play with their sweethearts or themselves that fall under the category of bondage. Yeah. Now, why do people like it? I think that was the other question you asked me.
Yeah. Why do people like it? Because you can get some real diehard kind of fans who would be all about bondage, and then other people who can take it or leave it. But it seems to be a whole part of kink in itself.
All right. So why people like it? For every person that may fantasize or enjoy bondage, there's going to be a different reason for it. Now, I can give you some big broad stroke categories, but this is certainly not exhaustive. So some people might like it because, well, let's see, being able to being held in place or being held securely might allow a person to have a full-blown orgasm without having to feel like they have to control their body. Okay. Like, and you don't mind if I get first person on this,
no,
do you?
No, go for it.
Okay. So like for me, I know that early on as I was exploring and playing with like kinky sex and all of that, I realized that as I'm approaching orgasm, I had to maintain a certain amount of bodily control. And what do I mean by that? If I want to have that like grand mal, gorgeous body shaking, screaming my head off, it kind of vaguely looks a little like being taken possession by some glorious succubus. You know, it does look like something out of The Exorcist.
Sounds amazing.
Right? And, you know, not all of my orgasms are like that, because we all have different kinds of orgasms, right? The little ones, the kind that I do for like rubbing off so I can go to sleep, or the long, slow one, or whatever, right? All sorts of different ones. Sometimes it's just a little quiver, and sometimes, on a rare occasion, it's the big grand mal seizure, like Exorcist, woo. But if I want that, I need to give myself over to the experience of it. But if I'm worrying about, I might worry that, oh, you know, this looks funny, or, true story, I might knock that bedside lamp over again. Because, you know, if I'm going into the flailing arms and legs and I'm like knocking things off my bedside table and accidentally, you know, giving a black eye to my partner.
That gets complicated.
That gets complicated. So then a part of me ends up like going, okay, you know, I need to like not do that. So then I end up dampening down my orgasmic potential. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Right? It's a good kind of a refocusing of that energy, I suppose, is it?
Right. So if I can rely on external support system to keep me, myself, the bedside lamp, my partner safe, and then I've also got something to like really like thrash up against, it's kind of like going into a mosh pit and knowing I'm going to come out safe. So that might be one reason. For somebody else, it might also be part of a more elaborate fantasy or role-playing fantasy. I mean, imagine a pirate wench fantasy without some rope and somebody tied to a mast, right? So there's the fantasy, oh no. And speaking of, oh no, bondage may also give an opportunity for people to have, engage in that, the fantasy of not having a choice. Of course, all of it is set up with negotiation that one has a choice, right? And the safe word is set up and the agreements are made so that we can play the pirate wench game of no, no, don't stop, no, don't stop. So bondage may allow for that fantasy. For somebody else, it might also be about having a stillness of the mind through stillness of the body. For some people, the sense of compression and weight just feels good. And I think it's true for a lot of animals. Like I think like animals that are anxious have these like heavy blankets,
or right? Even humans with the weighted blankets for anxiety and helping you sleep is really they're really popular. But like you said, yeah, like the skin is like, that's one of our biggest organs. And, you know, sometimes we only focus on the genitals, which is a very small part of the body, really. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you're touching more of the body, that surely seems like it would be a good thing.
So there are so many reasons to like bondage. And then you can get into specific textures, like maybe somebody likes the smell and sensation of leather, or maybe somebody likes the smell sensation and the material of, say, latex, or particular sensation of rope. So there's also a tactile and sensory pleasure. And so there's that. And I'm also actually including blindfolds as a part of bondage, as removing one of the senses. And if we include blindfold as, you know, that kind of little bondage. Yeah, it is a category of bondage.
Yeah, it's still restricting. You know, it's not movement, yeah, but it's restricting part of your body functions, I suppose.
So if we extend it to and include blindfolds into bondage, then the percentage of people who engage in bondage of some sort or another is pretty vast.
Absolutely. Yeah. From whatever stage, you know, from simple, even holding down a pair of wrists or, you know, full on intricate bondage that you see. And I suppose that can be one thing that a lot of people might find intimidating. You know, you look at some Japanese bondage and it's so artistic a lot of the time. You know, you've got full on chest harnesses and all these like intricate patterns and maybe suspension if we're going kind of a bit further down the line. And that's when people are, you know, hanging somehow from the ceiling in various different ways or whatever piece of equipment you have. But do you think some of that it can be quite intimidating for people? So if you're starting out, it's like this pressure to, oh, I have to do these 50 billion ties and knots and, you know, layers, and I have to buy, you know, so many pieces of rope to be able to do that. It seems to be a little challenging, I think, for some people. Oh,
I absolutely agree. And see, this is the pros and cons of the internet, right? It's absolutely fantastic that we can go online and access safe, accurate, and validating information like your show. And you can find a lot of good information so people are less isolated. That's the good side. The less good or possibly toxic or harmful side is a deluge of information, including harmful, incorrect, or discouraging information, and a sampling bias. I mean, if I were new to, say, rope bondage, let's just pick Shibari, for example, okay? And if I were new to it and I started Googling for it, for information, the images that come up, you're right, are very complex. By the way, complex looking Japanese rope bondage is actually a modern phenomenon. Even as recent as 1970s in Japan, rope bondage was a lot simpler. It had more to do with a particular aesthetic and fantasy expression, but that's another episode. But yes, you can go on there and find all of this information, and there and if you're looking at images, and if we look at these images and think this is what I'm supposed to be doing in terms of rope bondage, it's intimidating, it looks very hard, it looks like it requires specialty rope, and oh my God, the suspensions. There's this whole idea, you know, if I were new, I would be looking at the images and thinking, if I'm not doing suspension, I'm not doing shibari, and I'm not doing rope bondage. And that is not helpful. I mean, suspension bondage is it looks fantastic if done well, it can feel good, but there's a lot of risk to it, and there's also a risk for cumulative injuries as well. And anyway, it's not the point. The point for, and I'm talking about for private play, I'm not talking about for people who are performing on stage or people who are doing professional photography or professional pornography. I like porn. You know, it's fun, but porn doesn't represent private sex life. It's kind of like trying to learn how to drive for my going to the grocery store and driving my Volvo by watching Fast and Furious. I love watching Fast and Furious. It's like this, you know, this insane amount of like stunt driving, and but I'm a middle-aged Asian lady in a Volvo.
A little bit different to Vin Diesel in his sports cars.
Yes. And yeah, you know, Vin's kind of hot in them sports cars. I think The Rock is hotter, but you know, we can argue on that.
Yeah,
one.
That's a different podcast. But,
yeah. So suspension bondage is not a target, not an objective. The objective of Japanese rope bondage for private play is pleasure and mutual joy. And you also don't need to know 1,000 different ties in order to achieve that. With merely knowing a simple two-column tie, essentially how to tie your shoelaces, if you can tie your shoelaces, you can do rope bondage. And you can do rope bondage just fine to explore the joys and the pleasures of it. So if you're going to enjoy the hot images and the suspensions, enjoy it for inspiration and ideas and fantasies. You don't have to do it. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to practice 1,000 hours to do this and have fun with your partner. Because if you're stressing on that, you're wasting the 1,000 hours you could be playing with your partner.
Yeah, which like would be a lot more fun, the actual like encounters with each other rather than homework, I suppose, that you'd call it. But yeah, I suppose it's in the age of the internet and social media sites that are for kinksters and you know, that kind of power of the selfie and stuff. People would always take pictures of their really good work and you know, it's all about likes sometimes as well. So they're going to put up, you know, really intricate stuff in order to, you know, like advanced profiles or whatever it happens to be, whereas the average person isn't going to be doing that exact work. So I suppose it's remembering that there's different levels.
Different levels, different purposes. And I also do want to address that I do still want people to know about basic safety, right? So yes, I don't want you to get intimidated. I also, and sometimes another aspect of researching about rope bondage online is that there's a whole lot of doom and gloom message, as if like doing any rope bondage is going to possibly kill you. I mean, there are some things that could, like if you tie a rope tightly around one's neck, that is not a good idea.
No.
but there are some basic common sense safety things. Mm-hmm. That have a good pair of safety scissors and look at basic safety information. Most important of it all is that all partners involved are able to, in the midst of play, clearly be able to signal if they're having a good time, if they need to stop, or if they need to make adjustments. Those adjustment feedbacks. So if, dear listener, if you are somebody who enjoys being tied up, yay. And I want you to be able to give feedback for adjustments in the middle of things and not feel like you can't say anything. Because sometimes people will be like, oh, I shouldn't say anything. Well, you know, all of our bodies are achy and sore and broken in various different ways and differently flexible. And your partner may not know that a particular way in which you're laying on, if I were laying on my left arm in a certain way, even if I didn't have bondage on me, my left arm gets a little tingly. Old injury, you know? So I need to be able to say, hey, sweetie, or signal or, you know, whatever, to make that little adjustment. And it doesn't take away from the scene. And if you're a person who enjoys tying, make sure you build in that adjustments, because if you know how to make the adjustments, that makes you really hot shit rope top.
Yeah, when you're adapting to real life, living and breathing humans, we're not perfect mannequins that don't have, you know, like you said, various old injuries or, you know, weird stuff going on with our bodies in the way that bodies operate.
Oh, and that brings to mind flexibility, because I'll often hear, I'm not flexible,
I can't
do rope bondage. Well, actually, not being flexible is a feature, not a bug. And if somebody, now for those of you listeners out there who are hyper-flexible, you actually have to be mindful of not being over-flexed or over-moved, because it could lead towards early onset of, say, like joint and tissue damage. If there's a hyper-flexible people will often push their limits just because they can. And that could actually add towards, say, like arthritis coming on earlier. But let's say that you are ordinary to less than ordinary flexible. If I were tying you, that means I don't have to work as hard. That's an advantage. And
that's always handy.
So if you don't feel like you're that flexible, It just means that it gives your partner easier opportunity. So it's a feature. It's an advantage.
Yeah. And well, you know, let's be honest, call a spade, a lot of people are into bondage because it's fun to bring into sex. And a lot of sex is, you know, we're either lying down for it or, you know, it's static sometimes. So it's not the worst thing in the world if you're not super flexible for that part of it.
You know, a good ottoman is a great thing to tie a person onto.
Because
it just makes like the perfect sex position. And if it's, you know, next time you're buying an ottoman or one of those like benches for the base of your bed or something, keep bondage possibilities in mind.
Okay, we'll all go off to IKEA now after listening to this. And because everyone's in lockdown currently in Ireland, so we're all kind of sprucing up our houses and all the rest. So maybe we can add in some sex furniture into that.
You know how many IKEA furnitures I have seen in dungeons, playrooms, and converted into sex furniture? Oh my God.
I wonder if they know. Maybe they're like, oh, we'll design this with these people in mind. Maybe.
Well, they are Swedes, right?
Yeah. It's not a lot to do in the winter time, so, you know, throw it in. That's fine. Going back to the body topic there for a minute, you know, the issue of gender is one I think that comes into everything, doesn't it? But, you know, in images and scenes around and even like instruction manuals, the person tying is usually, you know, a male body, and the person being tied is usually a female presenting body. And, you know, and sometimes those body types can be very, you know, very slim, very Western looking, very hetero. Is that really the reality, or is this just what we're seeing on social media? Or, you know, I think some people who may be a bit bigger might feel, oh, I can't be tied up because I'm not super slim like this person.
Oh, my God. Your observation is absolutely correct. And it completely chaps my hide, as we say over here in the States. I find that a lot of visual imagery, and it's a vicious cycle. Right? If visual imagery that may be created for heteronormative porn consumption will have a particular kind of looks for the talents. Okay, but why does that have to get replicated in non-porn industry image? And unfortunately, it is. And you're right, there's a preponderance of image of male presenting and larger, like tall, big people topping, and smaller, flexible, and more like media designated attractive body.
Yeah,
right?
Like we'd see in Hollywood and music.
Yeah,
and everything else.
I think that makes it, first of all, it assumes for power dynamics between the genders, which makes for any other appetites, it erases and silences any other appetites. So if you are a fellow who loves being tied up, it's not validated. So of course it continues to stigmatize masculine bottoming. If you're somebody who enjoys topping somebody who is masculine and bottoming, you're also erased out of that. If you don't fit into the, you know, size 3 or less category, then you're somehow made to feel like that's not a play that you have access to, bringing up all sorts of like gender, body, class, size, age issue. And of course they're all like young in a lot of the images. So, you know, here I am, middle-aged Asian lady, and where do I fit in, right? So that was actually in my book, Seductive Art of Japanese Bondage. I made a point of putting in all range of color, size, genders, individuals. And as it was the first English language instruction book, I was hoping that would create an actively inclusive, welcoming, celebrating visual. Unfortunately, that has not been repeated, and it breaks my heart. I am encouraged, however, that there are some professional image makers that are creating different bodied imagery. But yeah, if you listeners are out there and you don't feel like you're fitting into whatever it is that your Google searches or your Pornhub searches or whatever brings up, that's just because the producers are narrow-minded. It's, yeah, we are all better than this.
Absolutely. And it's like size shouldn't determine, or age, or all those little intersections you were saying shouldn't determine, you know, what activities you can do when it comes to sex. But, you know, we recently had Robin Wilson Beatty on the podcast, and she was talking about disability and sex. And again, not something you see a whole lot of images. Yeah, yeah, she's, oh my gosh, she's amazing. We're going to have to come back to Robin another time when her book comes out. But she was talking as well about how disabled people were just completely erased in sex education and by doctors when it came to, you know, them having a sex life and desires. And I assume, like, would that be the same when it comes to bondage? Because you don't see a lot of people, a lot of images of people who may be using a wheelchair and having that be part of their bondage scene. Or, you know, Robin was talking about having to use her crutches going to a play party, or you know, things like that. Is that the case? Like, are there resources out there to help people, you know, figure out different bondage experiences for people with disabilities?
Not much. And Robin's absolutely right on that. It's not something that is, first of all, sexually social environments, not just play parties, but sometimes like munches or just social gatherings or sex parties or whatever, oftentimes not accessible. And, you know, here in San Francisco, location is difficult and we are a vertical town. So it's difficult for producers who want to and event organizers who want to create accessible events, but it's also not something people think about. And people aren't thinking, and I've had situations of playing with friends and partners who have different abilities where this was interesting. I'm playing with a friend who spends part of his time in a wheelchair, right? And I ended up in the play games, the sex games we were playing, where I would, quote, steal his wheelchair. I stole his wheelchair and then tied him up. And this was at a play party. And there were other people that were offended by this. And they were offended by this whole idea of it. And he was fine with it. In fact, he wanted it. It was something we fully negotiated. The root of this was that people assumed that, and this is people not involved in the conversation, assumed an infantilizing protective stance that somebody with different abilities would not want to experience bondage or kink.
Or couldn't consent to what they were doing as well.
Or couldn't consent. It's just that half of the time his legs didn't work. It had nothing to do with him, you know. Yeah, he's a big old giant pervert.
The best kind.
Yeah. And so for my friend who spends a lot of his time in a wheelchair, that is, in a sense, a part of his body and part of his mobility. And that in the play, removing his wheelchair was not an abuse, but like much like tying ankles together for somebody who does walk. And that I recognize that as part of mobility restriction, and that we were not babying him in this. So there were all these people that were coming to his rescue when he didn't need rescuing.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty annoying if you're, you know, playing with someone and you're just trying to get off and have fun, and obviously people are still coming in, and yeah. That's pretty annoying. And I'm sure probably more common than we might think as well.
And that would be something that Robin probably can address, but just from my being out in the world, that is what I notice. Yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah, completely frustrating. Going back to I suppose what we said at the start about intimidation and getting, you know, maybe into bondage as well. I'm someone who looks at when I have a lot of choice, I'm like, oh, I feel really overwhelmed. It's like trying to shop for jeans. I'm just like, I can't deal with it. There's just too much choice. So when it comes,
Do you have that problem with jeans too?
Yeah, I can't deal with it. I'd rather I give up most of the time. I can't deal. So when it comes to things like rope, there's so much to choose from between the type of rope, like the material, the fabric, the thickness of the rope, you know, like what you're doing with it, how to wash it. Like, where, I know obviously your book addresses some of this, but where do people start with? Like, is there pressure that you have to get this specialized imported rope? Is there like an ideal thickness? You know, where do we start?
Okay. So are we talking specifically about rope bondage, or are we talking about general bondage? General.
Now that is an interesting point. Yeah. So I suppose we have to be clear about where we're going. So let's start with the rope bondage start.
Okay, because if I were talking to somebody who's absolutely new to bondage, I might not start them with rope. Okay. The easiest way to, say, play with bondage that's before rope, because, you know, with rope, we might get a little bit like, you know, okay, we need to learn how to tie a knot. But what if you didn't have to tie a knot? So there are things like sports wraps and vet wrap. They stick to themselves. You know, like when you're
binding horses' legs, that kind of like a plaster, stretchy.
Yeah. And also ACE bandages that not Band-Aids, but, you know, bandages that stick to, like, sports wrap for adding a little support to, say, a shin splint or something, right? Okay. Self-clinging over-the-counter medical wraps. Those are great. You can just like tie a wrist together, and then you have the safety shears and you cut them right out. Cling wrap is great. Just don't cover nose and mouth. Cling wrap is super fantastic. And if you want to get a little cheeky about it, the moving companies have those cling wrap, pallet cling wraps on a handle that spin around.
Industrial style, yeah.
Yeah. You can even get them at, like, storage units and things like that. I don't know if you have equivalents of, like, the container store.
Yeah, we storage units.
Oh, my God, the container store is, like, full of bondage toys.
Okay, like bubble wrap.
Yeah, bubble wrap. You can also, like, you know the Velcro for keeping cables together?
Yeah, okay. I didn't think of that, yeah.
Like Velcro, soft cables for Velcro for keeping your cords organized. Those are great for wrist ties. And you can get big Velcro or even, cling wrap. That's an easier way to do quickie bondage that's cheap and accessible. And, you know, it's like, oh, my God, you have a date on a Saturday night at 8 o'clock. It's 6 o'clock on Saturday. What do? You go down to the convenience store, get yourself some cling wrap and a pair of scissors. You're set.
Which is obviously a lot more accessible and cheaper as well. Or even what about clothes as well?
Oh, totally. Okay. So XXX large pantyhose.
Like tights,
a triple X large pantyhose, tights. You can put a whole person's legs in it. You can put arms in it. It's stretchy. And so I'm a tiny person, right? So if you take like a big pantyhose, you can put it all the way on my legs like a mermaid.
Okay.
Right? All the way up to above my boobs and even my arms as well. Stick a vibrator in that. Oh, no, it's now a bondage sack.
A very cheap one. Yeah.
$5.
Yeah. And handy that you don't have to explain it to parents if you live at home or, you know, like it's just a part of your underwear drawer. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah. It's like, Mom, why do you have a 5X 5X tights? I'm like, oh, I bought it by mistake.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to explain than a massive latex catsuit or something.
Now, as far as rope, okay, so there's a lot of really easily accessible bondage. But as far as rope, I'm going to, if you're first starting off, there's no reason you need to drop a small fortune in fancy hemp rope. Now, if you are going to buy hemp rope, I love hemp rope from people like Twisted Monk, and there are specialty handmade rope makers that, you know, in your regions that you should trust and give business to. I happen to love Twisted Monk, but, you know, we all have our favorites. But if you're just starting off, I'm going to recommend thick cotton rope. And don't use like skinny clothesline because that'll cut in. Thick cotton rope, and they come pretty cheaply at sex shops. I recommend starting with nice, thick cotton bondage rope. Here's the reason why. One, it's cheap. Save the money, spend it on lube, right? And two, because it's cheap, you don't feel bad about cutting it, experimenting with it. Also, it's cotton. So if you get lube, sweat, cum, drool, all the good juicy sex stuff on it, you just throw it in a little mesh laundry bag. Don't throw it in the dryer. It shrinks weird. But you just wash it, and the more you use it, the softer it gets. Whereas, like, the specialty material have special ways of maintaining it. And honestly, it's not what you want to spend your time on until you get deeply into it.
Yeah, because you have to buy, like, oils to soften the fabrics and stuff as well. So, yeah, like, a lot of people don't have time or the space as well sometimes to, you know.
Drying rope in a small New York apartment. No, that takes a lot.
Yeah,
a lot of space and a lot of bother. Start with cotton. It's body friendly. A nice thing about cotton is it holds a knot really well. Oh, I don't recommend in general going with the slippery nylon ropes. I mean, they look pretty. They feel nice when they're not moving. But boy, they don't hold a knot. They're a pain in the ass.
Okay. And so the knot will come out of them?
Knot will come undone, and then then if I'm doing this, tying it, and the knot comes undone, I'll feel incompetent, and it'll take away from the pleasure, and then I'll think I have to learn all these complicated ties, and back to square one. Yeah, go for the cotton.
That's it. I mean, you know, sex is complicated enough, so I suppose if we can make it a bit easier, then happy days. So that's brilliant. So back, you know, pre-pandemic times, you know, you also teach rope in person, you know, imagine that nowadays, but you also teach, you know, you have your rope dojo. What goes on in that, and what kind of people come along to those in-person workshops?
So in-person workshop. Oh, I am also, it's not in person, but I am also teaching virtually as well now during, you know, COVID times. But for the in-person one, which I will get back to, dear listeners, come to them. Let's see. Mostly, I'd say that they're all people who are invested in improving their pleasure. There are all sorts of demographics. So queer, straight, generally tending from 30s-ish into 60s-ish. And I think the 30s-ish part may have more to do with time and income, but also maybe folks in their 20s are just figuring themselves out. Lately, I was getting more people in their late 20s, but folks are busy, you know, establishing a career, going to school, whatnot, and and oftentimes they're pairs, but sometimes people just come with a friend. I make pair pricing, so it makes it easier to bring a friend and make it, you know, friends and family pricing.
Nice. Yeah. Well, it's nice to see that there are those resources, because, you know, it's nice to learn in person. I think anything that I'm doing technical, like even if I'm learning how to operate a camera, I struggle to read a book on it. I need to actually touch it because that's my learning style. So I assume there's a lot of rope people who would be the same, and getting to do it, you know, hands on is kind of handy. No pun intended.
Absolutely. And I also think that we were talking about being intimidated, right? If I'm going to a class and feeling like I must be the, you know, worst person and most novice in rope and tying knots. And then I look around and realize, oh, wait, at least a third to half of the class are kind of like me. Oh, okay. And that's very validating. It also allows for people to make friends. I don't mean like finding lovers, but just finding friends. I think that's one of the most important things in socializing in sexual subcultures is making friends.
Yeah, and it's nice being in those kind of spaces sometimes, because the conversations that you have can be very liberating sometimes. And I suppose it feels like it's nice to be in spaces where people can be comfortable about themselves and their bodies and their sexualities as well. And I know, like, you travel internationally, or you did before the pandemic, travel internationally. And I was lucky enough to go to one of your workshops before in Copenhagen. And I felt that, you know, what you're saying, it was very true. It was a very comfortable experience. Everyone had all sorts of different levels. There was all sorts of different body types. It felt very comfortable. You know, it wasn't all, you know, being there around a group of models who are all insanely talented at tying. You know, it was for the fumblers amongst us, and, you know, a bit of everyone. So it's nice to, I suppose, have that, like, not a safe space, because that isn't quite the right word, but it just, this was a comfortable and fun space. That's also safe, of course, but
real people.
It's
a whole range of ordinary folks.
And that's who's having sex. Ordinary folks along the way. So what's been your favorite experience traveling around the world teaching bondage?
And to clarify for the listeners, I teach on a wide range of topic. Bondage is a small part of what I teach. It just happens to be part of our topic today. I love to travel. I love meeting people. And I love, it's been a joy to give people new tools to express themselves. So I do miss, and in all the places I've been, I've made some good friends, and I miss seeing my friends in my travel, like my Forte Femme, my Women's Weekend, Women's Dominance Weekend. I would do that in San Francisco and New York in alternating months. I miss my New York friends. The San Francisco friends I get to see a little bit, but man, I miss the running around in New York and oftentimes just ordinary things like grabbing lunch with kinky pervy friends or going to a museum or whatever.
I can imagine. Hopefully soon we will be back to that. So, you mentioned there your female dominance workshops and weekends. So what kind of goes on in those? So you said they're mostly people aged around 30-ish, but can obviously vary. So it's a weekend intensive, right?
Forte Femme Women's Dominance Weekend Intensive is a 3-day intensive limited to 8 women. And it's very inclusive definition of women, by the way. What we cover are tools by which to better identify our own desires, to give language to our own desires, and to be able to have the tools to co-create joy with our partners on our own terms. It's while we call it the Women's Dominance Weekend Intensive, one does not need to identify as being or enjoying dominance. And for that matter, I don't need people to turn into a dominant. What I'm looking for is that women be able to identify and speak what would please them now. And again, to have tools to co-create pleasures with those around them.
And I suppose that's a nice thing, because I think, you know, I think female dominance can be very fetishized sometimes if we're looking at certain kinds of media. So it's kind of nice to see that you're providing a more realistic viewpoint of it as well. That's a nice thing.
Yeah, engaging in ethical power and joy-centered leadership.
Talk to me about the power dynamic aspect, because obviously bondage is one way to, you know, enjoy a power dynamic, as one person is kind of helpless and the other person has all the power. But for some people, power dynamics absolutely involve sex, and others it doesn't. So it's just the tying up and the power exchange, and then there's no sex involved. So where are you in those two, not polar opposites, but, you know, they're different viewpoints?
All of it is good.
Yeah,
it's all good as long as the participating individuals are on the same sheet of music.
Yeah, that bit's important.
that's where oftentimes the issues come up, is that the expectations and the assumptions were not spoken, and agreement on how we're playing wasn't reached together. So let's say if I'm wanting to play with bondage as like, this is about sex and temporary authority, whereas if you were wanting to play with me because you wanted to experience bondage as sensation but not sex or power, and we both said yes, we like bondage, but we didn't examine as to what we wanted in the now, well, that the likely outcome of that particular scene is probably not going to be all that great.
Yeah, like with anything, if you're not communicating, it's going to be complex.
And sometimes we jump to conclusion with, if we have a picture in our head as to what bondage is and what it can be, and I might just blurt out the word bondage and assume that you've internalized the same thing. And that, for any of the listeners out there who are nodding your head, this happens very frequently. It is, you are not alone in this stumbling over unspoken assumptions.
And I think it's very important to work towards eradicating those, because again, if you have someone tied up and, you know, there's a conflict of, you know, assumptions about what's going to happen, then we get into murky territory around consent and informed consent, especially of like, you know, I thought this was going to happen and the other person thinks something else is going to happen. So do you have any tips on if you're in that situation and you're thinking, oh, hang on, you know, this isn't what I signed up to, but you're tied up. So how do you communicate to the person that you're interacting with that actually this needs to stop now and, you know, maybe reconfigure or completely stop?
Yeah, if it's heading down the road of I am really not having a good time, or I'm really not being understood in this, it is a good idea to extract yourself and extract yourself from it and try to have a no blame conversation. Now, before getting into it, some questions that one would be helpful to ask oneself and one's partner is, so it goes something like this. Okay, so about bondage right now, okay, what is it about? What is it about rope bondage or whatever kind of bondage? What is it about bondage that you like, and how do you think it'll make you feel? Okay, and then asking the partner of that as well. So now we're starting to get into what kind of feelings do we want? What is fun about it, and what assumptions right now am I bringing to the table, and where can we find an overlap? You could also ask, well, paint me a picture of what might happen. Mutually, and not just one person, the person doing the tying saying it, or the person doing receiving the tying saying it, but both parties.
Yeah, very important. Because there's so many different ways, like you were saying, to engage in this. Like, there's so many different ways to engage in sex. And, you know, bondage for one person might be very soft and gentle and nurturing. And then for others, it might be more in the sadistic, torturous side, because, you know, and then all the many, many different ways in the middle, or perhaps all everything all in one session. So that can be hard. Yeah, I suppose if you're hoping to get tied up by someone and they're really into sadistic bondage and you're into, you know, that soft, squishy, lovely, nurturing type, you know, maybe that might not be the right person for you to play yeah. with on that level.
Or that night, because the moods and appetites do change. I mean, if one person is expecting like rough and tumble and like a lot of resistance, and the other person is imagining and fantasizing something more obedience focused or soft and gentle, the one person who's thinking this is going to be like rough and tumble will be like, oh, they're not moving. They're not having any fun. Oh no, what am I doing wrong? And when the other person's quietly thinking, they're being so terribly rough with me. I don't understand. Oh my God. And this happens more often than not.
Yeah, I could definitely imagine. And speaking of the sadistic and the kind of torturous side of things, you recently wrote an article about predicament bondage. And do you want to explain to people what that is? Because I think, again, that's something that people might have an image in their head about what it might be, but and that might not correspond to what it actually is.
So predicament bondage is a situation where mobility is controlled or limited through creating a situation of conflicting desires. And when I say conflicting desires, it could be something physical like, so imagine a person on doggy style, right? Okay. There may be nipple clamps attached to nipples and then attached to, say, the headboards ahead of you. And then say their favorite vibrator is on their genitals behind them. In order to reach the genital to the vibrator, they have to strain on the nipple clamps. In order to be nicer on the nipples, you have to pull away from your favorite vibrator. That is a conflict of two different motivations. Nipples, vibrator. Nipples, vibrator. So that's like a really super simple example.
Yeah, but you can get the message from that of you can have that choice between pain or pleasure or, mm-hmm. yeah.
And it's always centered around joy and fun. And the objective is not about unpleasantness, but it's creating a game, right? Game of choice. And when we were kids, we had games of choices and predicaments all the time. I mean, when you think about it, floor is lava is a predicament.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. You know, you need to hop from the chair to the couch and not touch the ground, but that's going to be a big leap. I mean, that's game design is about creating conflicting motivations oftentimes.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I suppose we don't really lose that sense of playing. It just gets transformed, I suppose, as we grow into adults. And yeah, then when sex comes into the mix, it gets even more complicated then on top of it. So
that's my favorite. My definition of BDSM is childhood joyous play with adult sexual privilege and cool toys.
Yeah. I mean, we have way cooler toys. Yeah, I like that idea.
Simon Says. Do you all play Simon Says over
there? Yeah. Simon Says jumper or something.
Right. And Simon Says is a DS game.
Yeah, it's
a DS and obedience game.
That's right. I suppose I never thought of it like that before and thought about it. Yeah. Now I'm thinking of like all the different childhood games and I'm like, oh, I bet there's adults out there recreating that as we speak in their bedrooms. So, yeah. And definitely, yeah, even like hide and seek, you know, there's probably a little bit of something. Yeah, no, we'll that's a different rabbit hole that we can go down.
Escape and evasion.
Yeah,
right?
Like that. Yeah. That's kind of fantasy land around that. So, that's an interesting one. Yeah, I'm sure there's way more there. And I'm sure, you know, your resources and stuff have a whole bunch of ideas. Where can people find you if they want to take some of your workshops? Again, you know, we're in lockdown currently in Ireland. So why not take a bondage workshop? You know?
Yeah. So I am making a lot of educational resources, videos, articles, and classes and office hours available in my Patreon, which is patreon.com/planetmidori. And I'm occasionally teaching, quite often actually, teaching online classes for different organizations. So if you are an organization, I teach classes, hit me up. And on social media, I am on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and now TikTok under Planet Midori.
Brilliant. I love how you're embracing the 21st century of TikTok, because I haven't got the energy to deal with it, but fair play to you. But I know we were talking there a little bit just beforehand about, you know, the misinformation that you can find on TikTok. So I know that it's really handy to have a person like yourself on there to provide like actual factual education.
Well, I have to credit my fans and friends for encouraging me. For the longest time, I'm like, I'm too busy for TikTok. And I had a couple of my fans say, look, there's a lot of people putting out inaccurate information that may potentially be harmful. It would really do the world some good if you could come on TikTok. And I'm like, okay, you know how to get me. I mean, they just like totally like, you know.
The mission sunk in.
Hard thing with that one.
Yeah. You know, but that, I mean, you know, that's what drives people in sex education. It is that mission that people have access to quality information that isn't going to harm them. So, you know, yeah, you're absolutely doing the right thing. So, Midori, thank you so much for today. I think we could talk for absolutely hours. And I know we've only just barely even scratched the surface of the magical world of bondage. So we might have you back on down the line and dive into it a little bit more, because there's so much.
I would love to come back on. I can talk about a lot of different things. So, dear listeners, hey, if you want me back, let this beautiful human know, and I'll come on back. I can talk about a lot of different things.
Absolutely.
I'll be happy to come back. And maybe someday in person.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I have great plans, and they've all been scuppered by COVID.
I've never been to Ireland.
No? Okay. We will pop that cherry for you. Some point soon, hopefully, we'll get you there. So yeah. Funny games. Thank you so much. And again, thanks to all my listeners for tuning in. Like Midori said, you can find her on Planet Midori on most of the social networks. You can find the Glow West podcast on Twitter and Instagram. It's Glow West podcast on both. You drop us a DM over there. And like I said at the start, please do help us keep the mics on. And that's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And rate and review over on Apple if you want to help spread the word. Or you can follow us on Spotify. And I look forward to chatting to you next time.